was a conversation between President Biden and President Xi of China. It was virtual. It lasted 3.5 hours with a break in between. It featured three main topics: human rights, climate change, Taiwan. All right. So Xi actually threatened Biden, saying, quote, the USA would be playing with fire, unquote, if it encouraged Taiwan to seek independence, which is not what the USA is doing, but playing with fire is a threat. So that was an interesting exchange. Now, how these things work is they sit down, they got big screens and their advisors are all around and they chat. But after 20 minutes, the transcripts stop. Okay, they give you a little flavor and then boom, they're out of there. Constructive, I mean, you got to engage Russia and China. You have to. Even if you don't like them, you can't just be pricking them like this because that's bad for everybody. So I've been trying to get this next guest on for a while. He's a very busy guy, but he is the best expert, in my opinion, on China in the United States of America. However, I might be a little prejudiced because he was the dean at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government when I matriculated there. I think that's what I did there, Dean. Didn't I matriculate there?
You did, but you also graduated, yes.
I know, I graduated. I think you guys really rue the day you ever accepted
me. Matriculates coming in and graduates going out, yeah.
You rue the day you accepted me, though.
Not at all.
So the dean wrote a book, which I read, called Destined for War. It's out in 2017, but certainly worth ordering on Amazon. And he knows without prejudice, which means he's not coming at it from a left-wing or a right-wing point of view. He knows the danger that China poses. So up front, Dean, how intense is that danger right now?
Well, three or four points, and then first, if there were a war, a full-scale war between the U.S. and China, we could each be destroyed. All of Cambridge, all of New York, all of D.C. So we living with a China like we learned to live with the Soviet Union, where Ronald Reagan rightly said, a nuclear war cannot be won and therefore must never be fought. So that's point one. Point two, Taiwan, from the perspective of China, is an inseparable part of China. There are things for which nations will go to war if required. When the South tried to declare independence from the US, the country, Washington, went to war with the Southern states. China believes Taiwan is an integral part of China. China has a no succession law. So if Taiwan were to take an unalterable, unambiguous step that made it independent, I think it's almost certain that China would go to war to prevent that happening. Three, if the U.S. came to the defense of Taiwan today, given the military balance of power in the region that's developed in the last 20 years, in that conflict over Taiwan, we would likely lose. So that's all very ugly. The good news is that China still remains committed to the peaceful reunification, they call it, and they have a lot of other things on their agenda. So I don't think it's likely that China moves out of the blue to take military action against Taiwan anytime soon. But I can certainly imagine some event or incident or accident, maybe some provocative action, extremely provocative by Taiwan, that Xi would feel like he had to respond to, and that could ultimately lead to a war between the U.S. and China.
All right. I don't think that Taipei is going to do that. I've been there. They just want to be left alone to make money. And okay, they know that if they saber rattle toward Beijing, it ain't going to work for them. Now, there is a difference.
That's good news. That's good right. news. Yeah.
And I believe that holds. Now, there is a big difference between the presentations of Donald Trump and of Joe Biden. My opinion, I could be wrong, is that Biden is perceived to be much weaker than Mr. Trump by Putin and by Xi. What do you think?
Well, it's a good question. And I think I think both Xi and Putin believed that Trump was not going to get in a war if he could conceivably avoid it. I remember a Chinese colleague once saying to me, Trump is the most trigger-shy president that the U.S. has seen in recent years. So while Trump had a lot of bluster in his threats, when you look at the instances he had an opportunity to attack or not to attack, he mainly decided not. So there's a question mark there. On Biden, again, Biden has made very clear that he's interested in trying to rebuild America, not to engage in foreign adventures, and that very dramatically in Afghanistan. So I would agree that as Putin and Xi assess the situation, they would think he would also be extremely reluctant to go to war over Latvia, if it was in, or Ukraine for Russia, or even over Taiwan. And I think what both of them assess is that, correctly, in my view, that the American public is tired of endless, winless wars and has a lot to do here at home. So I think, again, unfortunately, that makes it more dangerous in that they may think they can do things that right. they could get away with.
Yeah,
and
the difference
miss the fact that the U.S. ends up responding in ways that would surprise them. Yeah.
The difference with Trump and Biden is that Trump took stuff personally. And he would say, I'm not going to let this happen on my watch. So they knew that. And that'll be, I don't know whether you know it or not, but I'm doing four history shows with former President Trump in December.
Oh, good.
And that is going to be one of the, you know, I'm going to try to get across to the mass of audiences in the arenas where we are, that even though he didn't, and you're absolutely correct, he did not want Trump, any of this conflict. If you crossed him, you were in trouble. Now, this global warming thing is huge in America in the age of political correctness and all that. I think it's a big con because I don't think China has any interest in fighting climate change at all. Am I wrong?
Well, again, if you're doing it in completely one-liners, you're closer to right than wrong, I'm afraid, in my personal view. I think the reality is that China is put more greenhouse gases into the air than any decline in U.S. or European emissions that have occurred since we started talking about having limits on emissions. The reason why is that emissions are essentially a function of economic growth. China is the fastest growing big economy in the world. China has installed three times as much green energy production as the U.S. in the period since the first Paris Accord, but it's also using more energy than anybody else. So as a result, it produces about twice as much greenhouse gases as the U.S. And if you take a person like Xi and you ask him, well, would you rather burn coal that'll produce emissions or have your citizens be cold in the winter? He says, wait a minute, that's not a hard choice for himself. So China is trying to build and burn all the hydrocarbons it can, and actually finds it interesting that the U.S. is withholding or discouraging production of hydrocarbons, oil and gas and coal, and then not quite noticing that the price of all these items go up.
It's a matter of political will. So China's economy is ascending. The United States economy, if it continues along, attack the fossil fuel industry, will get hurt. But the logical point is, if India and China are not going to cooperate in tamping down emissions, no matter what Europe and the USA do, it's not going to matter. Am I wrong?
The point that most people don't get. So it's all like we were all in one bathtub. And excuse for my analogy, but suppose, you know, you're trying to restrain your leaking of urine and manage to do so for the most part, but I continue to pee in the bathtub. We're all in the same bathtub, so it don't make any difference. We live in an enclosed biosphere. So if China continues emitting greenhouse gases on its current trajectory, and the U.S. goes to zero, you only extend by a few years the point at which you reach the threshold that people say would create a 1.5°C increase in the heat of the climate.
Temperature.
I'm not sure even about all those calculations, but the logic of your point is exactly right, that this is a situation where I've described it as almost as if we were inseparable conjoined Siamese twins, in which if one of the party just by itself can make the thing impossible. So unless we can find a way to do this cooperatively.
I don't know how you find that way. The Chinese, as you just put it, Xi doesn't have any interest in this at all. Final question. What the Chinese did to Hong Kong was totally unnecessary, in my opinion. All right, and correct me if I'm wrong. Hong Kong was functioning as a vibrant democracy, a center of capitalism. They brought a lot of currency into China when the two basically collaborated. China, for no reason at all, went in to try to squelch the freedom that Hong Kong had. And that sends a message to me like, these people are fanatics. I mean, they don't care about human rights. They don't care about freedom. They don't care about anything but money and power. And that's disturbing. Is there another aspect to this that I'm missing?
Well, I think, I thought that letting the Hong Kong experiment run, which some Chinese described as capitalism with Chinese characteristics, was a good idea. Hong Kong is one of the miracles of the world the last 20 years. A vibrant, lively, fascinating city-state. It was also seeing a number of 5%, maybe 2% of the population, wanting greater political rights, including democratization and even independence from China. China made it clear from its perspective, Hong Kong is part of China. Hong Kong's going to live under China rules. And they believe they can control Hong Kong, govern it under China rules, and keep it vibrant economically. That's going to be the test. But so far, it looks like they may win this game.
Yeah, but no democracy in China. You better not open your mouth. You wind up in some gulag someplace. Hey,
exactly.
Dean, we really appreciate it. Say hello to maybe my six fans in Cambridge.
Exactly. And we'll look forward to seeing you in Cambridge sometime. Good.
Listen, I'll come on up and we'll cause some trouble. And we really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Pleasure.
All right, that's
Graham
Allison, who knows more about China than anybody. So I'm a Roman Catholic. All right. And my family has been Roman Catholic forever. Irish, 93% Irish, 7% Viking, according to PBS. All right. So the Vikings, they weren't exactly being converted. Okay. Too busy cutting people's heads off. But my family goes way, way back in the Roman Catholic tradition in Ireland. And I am what they call a loyal Catholic in the sense that I understand the totality of my religion. I understand the theology. The theology of the religion, what Jesus taught and how he conducted himself. And I wrote Killing Jesus. If you really want to know what the man did, you read that book. It doesn't stack up to the way the contemporary Catholic Church is being run worldwide. There's a huge chasm between what Jesus was putting out there and what the men who run the church are putting out there. Now, you want to take that as a criticism? Fine. I'll back it up 50 different ways. But that doesn't mean that I don't show up to church. And it doesn't mean that I throw out the theology. Why would I do that? That's like saying, okay, Joe Biden's screwing up America, so I don't want to be an American citizen anymore. I'm going to be an Albanian. Does that make sense? No. You fight. You stay if you find it worthy. And I do. And the main reason I find it worthy is because we live in a secular world where it's all about me. And you know that. It's me, me, me. Where's mine, my, mine? Particularly the under 50 American group. All right. It's staring at the screen, immediate gratification, very, very little thought about other people, what the big picture is, what's good for all. Okay, that was a message that the Nazarene brought. Not about you. It's about what you can do to help others. That was a message. It's pretty simple. So you either buy in or you don't, and most people don't. So right now in America, about 23% of the population is Roman Catholic. Almost half of that is Hispanic. So you can see that the Anglo tradition in the church has fallen drastically. And that leads to a lot of complications. So it's a different parish. It's a different tone. Everything's different. And they can't recruit priests. Hard to recruit them. Okay? They don't want to live celibate lives, a lonely, tough life to be a Catholic priest. So there's problems everywhere. And I am very cognizant. And I don't not bring these problems to you. But there is a story now that is a nexus between Joe Biden, the president of the United States, and the Catholic Church. And this is an important story, which is why I'm setting myself up here, all right, and giving you perspective on where I'm coming from. So the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops starts today, a meeting in Baltimore, Maryland, 4 days. And the essence of the conference is to better define the most important sacrament in the church, which is the Holy Eucharist, communion. Okay? As part of that, there's a movement within the American Catholics to ban people like Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi from publicly receiving communion because of their promotion of abortion. In fact, the Archbishop of San Francisco, Cord Leon, okay, I know for a fact, has told Mrs. Pelosi not to receive communion privately. Okay? And you never see her, ever see her in a Catholic church receiving communion. Whereas Biden, he goes pretty much every week. Now, the Pope Francis, who is a liberal theologian, nothing wrong with that. I think he's a good man. He's made it very, very clear he does not want to what they call weaponize the Holy Eucharist. He does not want to get spiritual things involved with politics. Okay? He is abundantly clear about that. However, he has directly called abortion homicide. There's no other meaning. That's what the Pope did about a month ago. So now there's a conundrum, word of the day. Catholics like me are looking to see how these bishops are going to treat Joe Biden. Now, it's not about pro-choice and pro-life. The Democratic Party is pro-choice. They have no use for the unborn. No protections. They don't want any limitations on the abortion process. That's in stone. So if you join that party, you're not changing them. That's where they are. But traditionally, Democratic Catholic politicians have said, I don't believe that, but I'm not going to intrude my religious beliefs on others. And so my private beliefs are different than the party platform for the Democrats. However, with Joe Biden, it is much different. He is promoting, as Pope Francis said, homicide. He's making it easier. Not only that, he wants me to pay for it. He wants to take my tax dollars and kill abort fetuses. He wants to do away with the Hyde Amendment, which is unconstitutional. He'll never do it, but he wants to. And he doesn't want any limitations on abortion at all. Therefore, when Texas or Mississippi or another state says after 16 weeks you can't have an abortion here, his Justice Department's right in there suing under Roe v. Wade. So Biden is promoting abortion. Right? He's making it happen more often. To me, and I'm not a judgmental man, I don't do that. I'm the biggest sinner ever. Okay? But to me, as a policy analyst, there's no other side to the story. He's promoting homicide in the words of Pope Francis. So how on earth can this guy go to church on Sunday and put his hand out to get the Holy Eucharist? One final thing. If you are in the state of what they call mortal sin, you are not allowed to receive communion. A mortal sin is when you know you're doing something wrong and you do it anyway. You don't care. All right? So I could make plenty of historical analogies to this, but I'm going to just stick on Biden. So I search for the smartest people to explain to me what the deuce is going on. Now, I will say, do not expect the bishops to ban Joe Biden from communion because it takes 2/3 vote to do it. I think they'll get a majority vote, but I don't think they'll get 2/3. Did you know every day is a perfect day for peace of mind? With American Home Shield Warranty, you are covered for unexpected breakdowns like leaky faucets or faulty water heaters. Choose a plan that fits your budget and rest easy knowing repairs and replacements are taken care of. Simply contact American Home Shield when an issue arises, and their trusted pros will handle it according to your coverage. Don't let worries about appliances and home systems weigh you down. Celebrate the reassurance of protection. Don't worry, be warranty. For 20% off plans, visit ahs.com/bill. For more details, see ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product is being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home builder or manufacturer. All right, so joining us now is a priest that I've known for a long time. His name is Edward Beck. He is a Passionist priest that is a selected order known for their intellectual heft. Now, I don't believe that for a second, Father, but, you know, that's the description. So tell me if I'm being unfair to Joe Biden.
Well, again, it's a much larger issue in many ways, I think, Bill. And just to put it in some context, so recently, Cardinal Bernardin, whom you'll remember, was Cardinal of Chicago. We just celebrated, remember him, 25 years dead. And he had what was called the seamless garment approach, so that all life issues were part of this greater fabric, and that they were all important, so that to single out one, like abortion, what about the other issues like capital punishment, like immigration, like the poor? And now we're talking more and more about the environment. So if you begin to have a checklist for who can and cannot receive, the Catholic Church now teaches capital punishment is not acceptable under any conditions.
And I agree with that, I've said it. But you're basically doing a sliding scale down. When you have millions of fetuses being aborted worldwide, that is far beyond the other social problems that you mentioned. And you have a president of the United States who basically is defying the accepted tenet of the Catholic Church that abortion is wrong. He's making it easier to have an abortion. More of the unborn are dying because of Joe Biden. You don't feel that you got to go in there and say, hey, Joe, you might want to rethink this?
Yes, most definitely. I think the church needs to advocate for its pro-life position. However, it doesn't seem to be, even with its own Catholics, doing a very good job. So what is the real problem in a sense? The majority of Catholics think that abortion should be legal under many circumstances.
I don't believe that poll. I don't believe it. True. I mean, if you look at the poll, if you look at the national polling on all religions, it's about 50-50.
Catholics, you know, you can say abortion should be legal.
Listen, if
the majority of Catholics do not think Roe v. Wade should be overturned.
Okay, let me.
So that's your Catholic population. So obviously they're not getting the message.
There's a difference between Roe v. Wade being overturned and supporting abortion. If somebody goes into the confessional and you're hearing their confession, mm-hmm. and they say to you, Father, I had an abortion, but I'm not sorry. I had to do it. Economic reasons, whatever. What do you say to them?
Well, I don't think they'd be coming to confession telling me they're not sorry. The confession is part where you're admitting that you've done something wrong and you're looking for forgiveness. So the only way you give someone absolution is if they are repentant. Otherwise, they have to go away and think about what they've done and come back when they are repentant. So I don't think that situation would probably happen. But what I am saying is that with regards this issue, you have to look at it in the broader context. So you were talking a lot about Jesus before, and what would Jesus do? Well, if you look at the Gospels, all of those meal narratives are precursors to the Eucharist, to the Last Supper. Who does Jesus eat with? He eats with sinners, prostitutes.
There's no way on earth that the Nazarene would justify abortion in any way, shape, or form.
Just stick with me for a minute.
No way on earth. In fact,
he believed that conversion happened as a result of inclusion, not exclusion.
Listen.
And so Pope Francis has said the Eucharist is for sick people, not the healthy ones. You want to get them in there and say, look, what you're believing about this, what you're doing.
And that's all well and good. If you want to convince people not to do it, that, I mean, I'll support you 100%. But what you're looking at now is a guy who's doing it in a way that's killing more of the unborn. He's right before your eyes.
Right.
And the Catholic Church is not condemning that.
The church is condemning it. The church
not with Biden. Biden's the most powerful man in the world.
They're saying his position is wrong. Abortion is acceptable under no conditions. They wouldn't necessarily say, as you are, that he's promoting abortion.
He is. I just laid it out. You can't deny what he's doing is promoting abortion by having late-term abortion, no limitations on it at all, taxpayer money going to fund it. He's promoting it.
But he has also said he's personally opposed to it.
So what? He can say whatever he wants. Babies are dying.
So you don't know
what
happens.
So what's your responsibility? Wait. What's your responsibility and the other clerics in the United States to prevent babies from dying? What's your responsibility? To mealy mouth around saying, oh, we don't want to be judgmental? Come on.
Yes. Our responsibility is to try to get people to see this pro-life position as the best one, the most godlike one, and we have to do our job to do that. However, you do that by talking with Joe Biden. He has a pastor, he has a bishop. You don't say, go get your act together, agree with what we do totally before you can come. No, Joe, come, but see what you're doing is wrong. See that your position is wrong. Be part of this community and all of the life positions that you stand for, Joe, we want to stand with you. Because Joe Biden has a lot of pro-life positions with regards to immigration, the environment, the poor, all aligns with the Catholic Church. In this issue, he is not aligning. But you try to convert hearts. You don't exclude and expect people then, oh, well.
But this is the big one because this is life and death. It's not pollution. It's not migrant relocation. It's life and death.
People are dying at the border. People are dying at the border. We're killing ourselves with the environment. Pope Francis
That's just esoteric stuff. Joe Biden is promoting death. He's promoting death. Every single time he blasts off any protections. And I mean, he doesn't want any protections for the unborn. It's out right now. I predict that this isn't going to pass. All right. Because there are a lot of liberal pastors in America they're going to follow the Pope's guidance.
The reason it's not going to pass is because Pope Francis just says, don't use the Eucharist as a wedge. Don't use the Eucharist, as you said earlier, as a weapon. A Eucharist is a sacrament of inclusion, of conversion, of helping people to get to a deeper place who are sick, who are struggling, who are trying to find their way in the faith community. Yes, speak against what they're doing wrong, no doubt. But are you going to stand there with a checklist? Am I supposed to, as a priest, say, okay, birth control, no communion. Abortion, no communion. Capital punishment, no communion. Who's going to do the checklist?
Nobody's going to do that because the issue isn't remotely close. When you're stacking bodies in Planned Parenthood clinics, that's a lot more than taking a birth control device, and you know it. So you guys hide behind this kind of semantical thing, and I'm telling you realistically, if I were Biden's pastor, there's no way that man would go to the communion rail. No way. Last word.
Well, I don't think that you, as pastor, have the right to refuse him. You don't know if he's talked to a confessor about this. You don't know what internal forum process he has gone through. You don't know how his own struggles with this issue have been. You have to, as you said, for serious sin, you have to will to be sinning, to turn away from God intentionally and be doing wrong intentionally. If Joe Biden believes that, then I agree with you. I don't think Joe Biden believes that, though. We want to get him.
You can't rationalize it. His actions, he is the most radical left president on abortion in the history of this country, and it is not even close.
I hope his heart changes on that.
But in the meantime, we're stacking dead bodies, Father. But we appreciate the lively debate. I hope we brought some clarity to a lot of people who aren't Catholic.
I don't know.
You what?
Or we brought more opaque quality to it. I'm not sure, but I hope we get some clarity.
Okay. Thanks, Father. We really appreciate it.
It's another morning, and you're all set for work. You grab your coffee, head out the door, and your car decides today's the day it won't start. Panic sets in. You're not just late, you're stranded. Get ahead of unexpected car repairs before they strike with CarShield, the most trusted vehicle protection company. For almost 20 years, CarShield has saved millions of drivers from repair nightmares with low monthly plans that cover up to 5,000 major parts and systems, like pricey transmission and engine repairs, and check engine light mysteries. Visit CarShield today at carshield.com/Carlson. Plans include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, help with flats, lockouts, and rental car options. Save 20% and get a free quote by visiting CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson. Don't wait for the next surprise. Choose peace of mind with CarShield. Go to carshield.com/Carlson and save 20% today.
Hey guys, it's Vivek Ramaswamy here, inviting you to listen to my podcast, Truth. We just relaunched it after the campaign, and we are already riding up the podcast charts. Here's why. I think that hard, in-depth conversations about the tough issues is the only way we're going to get this country back. Because make no mistake, we are currently in a war for the future of America, and you cannot win a war unless you're willing to speak the truth. If you want standard conservative talking points, this podcast is not for you. But if you want to go deeper and hear the conversations you're not going to find anywhere else, the conversations that will challenge you, that will challenge me, then subscribe to Truth with Vivek Ramaswamy on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And I promise you, you're going to cover terrain that you're not going to hear elsewhere.
Okay, so we have a situation where all of this spending is now causing the Fed to print more money because they have to cover the expenditures. There's not enough money in the U.S. Treasury to do it. So they print money. And that means the dollars that you have in a bank or invested, their worth go down. That's inflation. So Biden's running around with Jen Psaki, oh, no, it's not going to cause more inflation. Every economist in the world just goes, what? And this is the extent of the incompetence that we have in Washington, D.C. right now. So Rasmussen Daily tracking, we give you this every day, 41% of likely U.S. voters approve of Mr. Biden's job performance, 58 don't. Bad number. I thought you might want to hear what the Trump number was. So in October 2020, before the vote, economist YouGov had Trump at 45% approval. Okay, NBC News had him at 45. Harvard Harris had him at 46. Gallup had him at 44. Not even close to where Biden is. So, you know, interesting information. And there's another big difference. That the people who liked Donald Trump and his performance in office really liked him. They were fanatical Trump people. And they would vote for him no matter what. Biden's support is soft. I've never seen a person go, I got to have that Joe Biden. He's the best. That Joe Biden, he's really doing a hell of a job. Have you? So all Biden's support is an anti-Trump play. That's it. So then the question becomes, the Democratic Party knows all this. What do? You only have less than a year before the midterms where the Democrats could lose everything in Congress, and that's the end of Joe Biden. So joining us now from New York City is Paul Alexander, the former media strategist for Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, a Democrat from Hawaii. So you can imagine, and I'm sure you know, that these meetings are going on. Now, how do we bring this back? How do we stop the bleeding and the polling? Do you have any idea what the strategy might be?
You know, there are a number of very basic things that I would recommend if I was in the administration. First and foremost, I think President Biden's open hostility toward oil and gas is a self-inflicted wound. There is no reason for the U.S. not to be energy independent, especially with record inflation and a supply chain crisis already hurting American wallets. Now, Eric Adams, the Democrat mayor-elect of New York City, was recently threatened by leadership of Black Lives Matter with riot and bloodshed if he did not give in to their demands. Adams just held a press conference calling on national Democrats to condemn this extremism. This would be an easy opportunity for President Biden to take a tough stance against real threats of violent crime. And beyond that, I would look to the very sensible and popular platform of now former Democrat Andrew Yang, who just recently launched the Forward Party. And I would use the bully pulpit to advocate for issues with bipartisan support overwhelmingly, things like open primaries, ranked choice voting, and term limits. Doing so would restore some of his credibility as a pragmatic consensus builder and do a lot to enhance the transparency, fairness, and efficiency of our democracy.
Isn't it too late? Come on, Paul, let's be honest. I mean, the guy, you know how hard it is to change people's perceptions. You get off on the wrong foot. They got that image, and his image is shot. I mean, he doesn't command the stage. He hasn't done anything to help the country, with the possible exception of vax rollouts, but he hasn't done anything. Isn't it too late for him?
No, I don't believe so. 1 year is an eternity in politics, and 3 years is obviously triple that length, whatever triple eternity.
But it's not going to be 3 years. He gets whacked next November. It's over
for
the Biden administration.
That could be true. He was in the Senate for 4 decades. When push comes to shove, perhaps he will really show his ability to form some consensus within that governing body and actually get things done. Perhaps now, when he doesn't have to do that, at least on paper by the numbers, he's being a little more bold and trying to check off more things from the progressive agenda than he otherwise would.
See, I could be wrong and I could be mean, and I don't want to be either, but I don't think he's up to the job. I don't think he can do it.
Okay. I mean, that's certainly your opinion. I'm not going to
argue that. Do you disagree with that opinion, though? Do you think that Joe Biden at age 79 can run this country effectively?
He certainly has not instilled confidence in me thus far, but I was of a similar belief prior to the election, to be fair.
So you never thought that Biden would be a good president. It was just the anti-Trump movement that put him into office, right?
To an extent. I mean, you had mentioned the polling earlier, and I think we should look at that. It is important to acknowledge that over the last 5 years in particular, there has been a consistent misreading of the electorate by national pollsters on both Democrat favorability and GOP turnout. The most egregious example that comes to mind is that ABC News Wisconsin poll that had Biden up plus 17 the week of the 2020 election, and then he won it by less than a point. You know, the Real Clear Politics average had Andrew Gillum ahead of Ron DeSantis by nearly 4 points, and we know Ron DeSantis won that race. More recently, it had New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy up by 8 points, and look how close that race turned out to be. So I think there is ample evidence here to suggest a real disconnect between Democrat polling and Democrat performance. Now, on to Biden.
Now, I'm gonna disagree with you, and I'm going to base it on a fact.
Okay.
So if you analyze the daily television ratings for MSNBC and CNN, unquestionably pro-Biden.
Sure.
They are at historic lows. No one watching them. Now, Fox is losing audience as well, but not nearly as rapidly. So that tells me that Democrats and independents who might be sympathetic to Mr. Biden, they don't want to see him. What do you think?
As I had said previously, his appearances rarely instill confidence, so I'm not going to entirely disagree with that. If you want to break up the segments between progressives, moderates, and independents, we can examine each of those. You know, right now, he does not seem to have a clearly defined base. He is yet to deliver any sort of major legislative victory for progressives who were already not particularly enthusiastic about him to begin with. For moderates, the infrastructure bill could be seen as a major victory, but I honestly do believe it's being overshadowed by the backlash to these controversial vaccine mandates, and that has turned him into a fairly polarizing president.
The folks are not going to care about any Build Back Better when they're paying three times as much for a gallon of gas and twice as much for food. Those issues will override any theoretical stuff. Last word.
I don't disagree with that. And if we want to look at that further, let's look to Bill Clinton as an example, who won independents overwhelmingly in his 96 reelect and left office with a 61% approval rating despite all the scandals. Why? Well, the economy was booming and he made lowering violent crime a top priority of his administration.
Yeah, he moved
security.
Right.
Security bill is a primal need, not a partisan one. That includes both financial security and public safety. And
there's
thus far,
no doubt about that. But Clinton was an extraordinary politician, and Biden is not. Hey, Paul, we really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, and very interesting segment.
Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. And you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once. Then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds, and stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arkseedkits.com, promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
Everything is expensive these days, you know that. The government is printing trillions of dollars in consumer prices higher than ever. If the government continues its printing and spending, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But there are a few things you can do right now. American Hartford Gold can show you how to protect your money, your retirement, your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. Start with a short phone call, and they can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or put inside your 401k or IRA. So please call or text them right now. Tell them Bill O'Reilly sent you. Call 877-444-GOLD, 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Again, that's 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Okay, here's the final thought. It's an easy one. You got to get away from the madness. You know, there's a lot of political intensity here. The country's not in a good place. It's not. So the reason I've set up BillO'Reilly.com is because it's one-stop shopping. You don't have to watch all the propaganda on television. All right? Now, if you want to, sure, go ahead. But it gives me a headache, and it makes me depressed sometimes. I'm going, what is this? Here, it's fact-based. Here's what's going on. If you check with us every 2 days or so, you'll know what's going on. We have it all organized for you. It's such a good convenience to have it. You stay on top of the news. Stay on top of what's happening. Don't get caught with no turkeys, okay? But at the same time, you don't have a massive migraine. So this weekend, I'm going to get some fresh air. I'm telling you, I'm going out. Look at the leaves. Leaves are still changing. It's crazy here in the Northeast. But you got to get away sometimes. You have to get away.